Joel, you want to know something?
What?
Every now and then, say what the f***. What the f*** gives you freedom? Freedom brings opportunity. Opportunity makes your future. If you can't say it, you can't do it.
Welcome to Sailing in the Mediterranean podcast. I'm your host. My name is Franz. Today's episode is a sample lesson from my Sailing Learn to Sail Bareboat Cruising Certification Lessons for the ASA 104 exam. The full series is 8 hours and 10 minutes long, and that 8 hours and 10 minutes is spread out over 23 lessons. If it's something you want to purchase, it's available at the website through a service called Gumroad. Also, you can find it in Amazon and iTunes. You can find links to this at my website, medsailor.com. Thanks. This is Sailing, Learn to Sail, Bareboat Cruising Certifications, and this is Lessons for the Written Portion of the ASA 104 exam. This is lesson number 18. We're going to be talking about customs and courtesies in this lesson. Describe the following courtesies and customs. Permission to come aboard. When you would like to visit another person on their boat, first thing you ask is permission to come aboard. I think this is a little formal, especially if I've invited somebody over to my boat, but I hear it all the time. They'll come to my boat at the appointed time, and when they get there, they ask permission to come aboard. Just shows proper yachting etiquette, but if I've invited somebody over to my boat, I've already invited them. I've already given them permission. But still, what I find is, at least among the British, and they're very proper, even if they've already received permission when they arrive, they say permission to come aboard. It's always good courtesy to ask that question. Ask for permission to board. So it's either permission to board or permission to come aboard or may I come aboard. Any one of those is just showing common courtesy. You're asking permission to come aboard. You're ringing somebody's doorbell. Let's say you come up on a boat that you've been invited to and nobody's in the cockpit. You don't see anybody. What do? Well, you knock on the hull. You can hear a knock on the hull all the way through a boat. So you knock on the hull. Somebody will poke their head up there and say, "Oh, hi, how you doing?" And then you say permission to come aboard. And they'll say, "Of course." And if you're in a dinghy, they will usually help you aboard. When you get aboard, take off your shoes. Always take off your shoes. Now, the skipper or the first mate may choose to give you the option. They may say, "Oh, you don't need to take your shoes off." But they shouldn't have to request that you take your shoes off. On my boat, I don't really care if my guests wear shoes or not. So I tell them they don't need to remove their shoes. But on other boats, they spend a lot of time polishing those decks. It may be a brand new boat. They don't want to get it scuffed up. So they shouldn't have to ask you to take off your shoes. Automatically take off your shoes when you get aboard. Now, in the land of the free, in the home of the brave, guess who does not have to ask permission to come aboard? The United States Coast Guard. The Coast Guard can board your boat anytime with or without permission. It's Title 14, Section 89 of the United States Code. So let me read the code for the Coast Guard. Title 14, Section 89 of the United States Code authorizes a U.S. Coast Guard to board vessels subject to the jurisdiction of the United States anytime, any place, upon the high seas, and upon any waterway over which the United States has jurisdiction to make inquiries, examinations, inspections, searches, seizures, and arrests. The U.S. Coast Guard does not require a warrant to conduct search, seizures, arrests over any United States water or high seas. The U.S. Coast Guard has full legal law enforcement power on any land under the control of the United States as needed to complete any mission. Now, the U.S. Coast Guard cannot board your vessel in Italian waters or Spanish waters, but on the high seas and in U.S. waters, it can. So there's the exception to the permission to come aboard rule. The Coast Guard, when it's coming aboard, will inform you that they are coming aboard, and they may ask for permission, but they are not required to get permission. I've never been boarded by the Coast Guard, but I do most of my sailing in European waters, and guess what? I've never been boarded by any other country's Coast Guard either. I do have a quick story on this, though. I was sailing back down from the Sea of Marmara along the coast of Turkey, and we had come into an anchorage, a fairly exposed anchorage, near a small town, and I can't remember the name of it, but it was north of Ayvalık, Turkey. And we decided to anchor for the night. As the night developed, there was a strong swell in and out. It was an exposed anchorage, so there were waves coming in and bouncing us around. It was holding. The holding was fine, but the motion of the boat was uncomfortable. About 1 in the morning, I turned to one of my crew members. I say, "Are you sleeping?" He said, "No, I can't sleep. It's too rough." So I said, "Well, let's just get up and go." And so we did. I laid out a new route on the GPS. It was pitch black, but I laid out a new route on the GPS, making sure to avoid any hazards to navigation. It was a pretty clear sail. There weren't really any hazards to navigation. It was pretty straightforward. And the next anchorage was about 20 miles away. So we were going to be at sea for 3 hours before we came into a spot that was going to give us better protection. It was calm conditions, no wind, so we were going to motor. I had my running lights on, and I'm at the cockpit keeping watch. And what I'm watching for is just other lights of other vessels to make sure we don't run into anything, following our GPS course. And suddenly, a big bright light is shined on me by a boat next to me. And of course, I hadn't seen this boat. It was not carrying any running lights, and it shined this big, bright spotlight right on me in the cockpit, followed alongside for a little while, and I thought, well, it must be a patrol boat. So I slowed down the boat, and then the light goes out, because I'm thinking they're going to want to board me. So the light goes out, and it disappears into the night, not showing any running lights. And this is right between Turkey and Greece, so there's a lot of patrol boats that are going up and down in that area looking for smugglers of goods and people. That's the closest I've come to being boarded, and they never bothered boarding me. Once they saw me and once they saw that I was slowing down the boat for them, they just turned off their lights and disappeared into the night. So I've never had the issue of a Coast Guard boarding, but common courtesy, ask permission before you board somebody's boat. The next courtesy we need to talk about is the permission to come alongside. Let's say that you're in a little town marina, and you're looking around for a place to anchor. There's no spots, but there's boats side-tied to the quay. If you see bumpers out on the outside of a boat that's tied to the quay, that's sort of indicating that that boat may be expecting to be rafted against. And the best thing to do is go alongside and ask if you can have permission to raft or permission to come alongside. That's what you're asking for, is rafting permission. Now, you don't want to try to raft to a boat smaller than yours, as a general rule. I've seen it done, but it's not good policy. You're putting a lot of stress on the boat next to the quay, next to the hard object. So always raft equal-sized boats or raft to a boat larger than yours. But always ask permission to come alongside. You're asking for rafting permission. Now, can you raft without permission? That's a question that a lot of people have not come to an agreement on. My thoughts on the subject are, if a boat already has fenders or bumpers off to its free side, not the side next to the quay, but the free side, there seems to be an implicit understanding that a boat may come and raft next to them. But that's not a hard and fast rule. Now let's say you have rafted. We've talked about this in the last lesson. If you've rafted next to another boat, common courtesy is that you always cross that boat on the foredeck of the boat. But you might just ask the boat that you're rafted next to, and let's say it's you, the rafted boat, and shore. So there's only two of you rafted. Ask them, is it okay to cross across the bow? Where would you like me to cross your boat? and they'll tell you where they'd like you to cross their boat. They may say go through the cockpit. They may say go across the foredeck. If you've rafted and there's nobody there, the common courtesy is you always cross at the foredeck, giving privacy to the people down below. Just because you don't see people on board doesn't mean they may not be down below reading a book or doing whatever. So courtesy in crossing boats is cross on the bow. Also, common courtesy is to ask for permission to cross their boats. You may be rafted 2, 3, 4 deep. Sometimes it's impossible to ask all the boats if it's okay to cross to get on shore, but you can pretty much assume that they've given permission, implicit permission, to cross their boats to get ashore. Sometimes you may want to just throw your dinghy in the water and use it as a method to get to shore. It's up to you. All right, let's talk about one of my favorite subjects, the rights of the first boat in an anchorage. Now, to me, this is common courtesy, but what I've found is it doesn't seem to be common courtesy. First boat has rights. First boat is the boat that you should stay away from. I can't tell you how many times I'll come into a huge anchorage area with acres and acres and acres of area that people can drop their anchors at and be every bit as safe as me. I will come in, I'll pick a spot, drop my anchor, test it out, and suddenly the next boat comes in, and where do they go? They beeline right to me, like I have some secret magic knowledge that they don't have. There's a magnet effect. I don't understand it. Maybe people can't read charts. Maybe they think the boat in there knows more than they do. Maybe they can't read pilots. I don't know. But there's this automatic magnet effect. But regardless of that, even if you decide you have to go next to the only boat in the entire anchorage, because you just like to be close to people, make sure you give that boat plenty of swing. If you're going to drop next to him, find out if he's got two anchors out, if he's got anchors at 45 degrees, because now his swing is going to be substantially less than your swing. Or if he's got one anchor out, how much scope does he have? Does he have 5-to-1, 6-to-1, 7-to-1? Because the scope is going to dictate the radius of his swing. So if he puts out a 6-to-1 scope and you put out a 4-to-1 or 5-to-1 scope, you could be swinging into each other. Ask the skipper if he's available how much scope he has out. I've come into anchorages a lot, and sometimes you think, well, I want to drop between that boat and shore. So you go and drop where you think you're going to be far enough from the other boat, and by the time you get all your scope out, you're basically right on top of the other boat. So that other boat is already anchored in the spot you wanted. You need to pull up your anchor and anchor somewhere else. I find the safest way to anchor next to another boat is pull up behind the boat and drop an anchor. Don't go to the front of the boat and don't go to the side of the boat. Pull up behind the anchored boat that's there already. Drop your hook and fall back. That's the easiest way I've found to anchor. Now, if the area where the boat's floating is deep and his anchor is in shallow water, you may have to pull up to the side of him, but make sure you go far enough to one side or the other that you're not going to be swinging into the other boat. But the rule of thumb is stay away from the first boat at anchor. And then when other boats come in, they should stay away from both of you. I told the story in a previous lesson about the woman at cooker time who came in late in the day and decided she had to have the spot between me and the boat that was just to my port side. She was in violation of etiquette. We were safely and securely moored, and she decided she had to have that spot between us. She was totally in violation of anchoring etiquette. And pretty much at that point in time, in that late afternoon, everyone around the anchorage area, all the spots were pretty much taken up. But there was a free spot right in the middle where she could drop her anchor and float free. She didn't want to do that for some reason. She seemed to feel that she had to tie to shore. And I told you the story of her backing down over her stern line and getting it wrapped in the prop. And so she ended up floating free, but she pretty much forced the French boat that was just to my port to pull up and move because her swing was going to interfere with him. Be polite. Be polite. Once you arrive at an anchorage and you're secure, be respectful of the other people. That's the second rule of Anchorage etiquette. Don't run your generator in the middle of the night. Don't run it early in the morning. Don't play your music loudly. Things that are irritating to other sailors are running engines for long periods of time. Now, I'll run my engine at anchor during the day to charge my batteries, and everybody does. Don't do it at night. Do it during the day. When you come into an anchorage, use the same anchor configurations of the other boats already at anchor. In other words, if they're running on a single anchor, you put out a single anchor. Put out about the same amount of scope as the other boats already at anchor. If you put out a long scope and everybody else has short scope, your swing is going to be different. You could run the risk of colliding with another boat. Don't take a speedboat and run it in and around an anchorage. It's very irritating to people already at anchor. It happens all the time, especially in the Mediterranean. But these are usually from people that aren't sailors. They're people that are on holiday and they've rented a runabout for the day and they think it's fun to kick up a wake in an anchorage area. Can't really do much about it, but you can control your own actions. If you have a dog on board, a dog barking all night is very irritating to other boats at anchorage. I don't know what you can do about it. Perhaps you should leave your dog behind. Now, if the dog's quiet and it only barks when somebody comes alongside, that's okay. He's an alarm bell. If you have a phone and you have to conduct business, put it on vibrate. Don't have ringtones go off all the time. Some people think that anchoring upwind and barbecuing is irritating. It never irritates me. It just makes me salivate. But some people are offended by that. Doesn't bother me, though. So just be courteous to the other boats already at anchor. All right. Courtesies of keeping clear of regattas. So you know there's going to be a race. There's a couple big races I've attended. And at these big races, you always have these people out in motorboats wanting to watch the start of the boat. Sometimes it's quite entertaining. There's in Newport Beach, there's a big race every year called the Ensenada race. It's from Newport Beach to Ensenada, Mexico. And I've been on this race when there's been over 300 boats participating. And you have multiple starts. And so they stagger the starts. And during this period of time, there's always these people running around the fleet in power boats or other sailboats wanting to watch the start of the race. I remember there's a guy that always goes out with a big flag of, and he calls the sailors sinners, and he's a religious fanatic, but it's entertaining. It's quite entertaining. But if you're one of those boats, stay clear of the regatta. Remember, these boats are maneuvering for a start, so they're sailing, going back and forth sailing when they're getting ready for their start. And you need to stay out of their way because they're trying to maneuver for a good start, for a good position. And that's a real technique to doing it well. That's pretty much it, keeping clear of regattas. Just stay away. Stay out of the way of boats maneuvering for the start. Now, if you're downwind of the starting line, stay away from the starting line. And I'm going to tell you one situation where I was totally in violation of this etiquette by mistake, by accident. I was up in Victoria, Canada. I went up there specifically to watch the start of the Swisher race. The Swisher race starts from Victoria, Canada, off the breakwater of Victoria, Canada. Not the breakwater, but it's out in the seaway in front of Victoria. And it goes from Victoria, Canada out to the Swisher Lighthouse out in Juan de Fuca Strait and back. So I was out there and it was a beautiful, beautiful, clear day. I think this is done over Memorial Day. I'm not sure, but I think that's when it's done. Early in the season, very start of the season. So I'm out there and I've got my boat and I've got my camera and I'm motoring. I don't have my sails up. I want to be able to maneuver my boat and I want to watch the start. I'm downwind of the start. It looks like it's going to be a spinnaker start. And as the start occurs, the wind shifts. And all these boats with spinnakers up start coming down on me. And they're coming fast. They're coming really fast. And I'm thinking, how do I get out of their way? How do I get out of their way? And there's no way that I can cross in front of them without fouling up the boat behind them. So what I ended up doing was just pointing my boat right upwind and going right in the middle of the fleet, trying to stay out of their way. If I tried to cross in front of one or behind another, there wasn't enough room, there wasn't enough time for me to get across safely. So I decided the best thing for me to do was just motor straight up the middle of the fleet until there was a break in the action, until there was another class that was starting. And I don't think there was another class. I think it was one solid class. And so I ended up just having to stay in that area, staying out of their way, and right in the middle of the fleet as they went down both sides of me. So I was clearly in violation of the ethics to keep clear of regatta in that situation. All right, next one we're going to talk about is flag etiquette. If you're British, this is a big deal. Here's what I think is the most important thing on flag etiquette. Number one, you have to fly your country flag, your ensign. It's called the ensign, which is the flag that identifies the documentation of the boat. Not necessarily the documentation of the people on board, but the where the boat is registered. So when I'm sailing in the Mediterranean, I always have to fly. It's required that I fly my U.S. flag. Now, where do I fly it? I fly it off the stern of my boat. That seems to be the most common place that I see flags flying. And I see this on big ships as well as small ships. Okay, the country flag, the courtesy flag of the country that I'm traveling in, its flag is flying on the starboard spreader, at the top of the starboard spreader. So just below the starboard spreader, the first starboard spreader is where the courtesy flag of the country I'm visiting is flying. Now, you can go crazy with flag etiquette if you want to. I'm not sure it's proper, but sometimes I've flown burgies of yacht clubs that I've been members of, such as the, not necessarily yacht clubs, but organizations that I've been a member of, such as the Seven Seas Cruising Association. You should normally fly those on the port spreader, on a halyard off the port spreader, but I don't have a halyard off the port spreader. I don't have a flag halyard off the port spreader. So I've put that below the flag of the country that I'm visiting. Not sure that's proper. I don't think it is proper. But I think people go a little crazy with flag etiquette. I think it's fly back to bygone eras. If you belong to a member of a yacht club, you can fly that flag at the bow of the boat or at the top of your mast or at port spreader on a flag halyard on the port spreader is proper too. I don't know how crazy they're going to be on flag etiquette on the ASA 104 exam. I think the basics are you fly your country ensign, and I've seen that most commonly flown from the stern of the boat. But I have seen sometimes the yacht ensign being flown from the masthead of the boat. But I think the most common courtesy is you fly your yacht ensign, your country flag ensign, below the flag of the country you're visiting, the courtesy flag. Now, the British have three different ensigns that they may fly. There's an ensign where the background is red, and then you have the British, the traditional British flag up in the corner. Then one where the flag is blue and the British flag up in the corner, and then one where it's white. And the British are a bit of a class society still. Well, I've seen different boats with different flags flying. So what I understand for the British, and I think this is sort of interesting, is anybody can fly the British flag where it's all red with the British flag in the corner, the little British flag in the corner. What it's called, the Union Jack? I don't think it's a Union Jack. Anyway, the British flag in the corner. You had to be a member of the Navy or one of the recognized yacht clubs to fly the blue flag, and you had to be very special. You had to be a member of the Royal Yacht Squadron to fly the white flag with the British ensign there. Quick story. And the only reason I know this is because of this story. I was in Brindisi, Italy. We were waiting for a weather window to pass over to Croatia. And I was at the yacht club in Brindisi, tied up at the yacht club. Just arrived that morning, and we were down below. I got a knock on the boat. a gentleman standing there, and he says, "Excuse me, excuse me." Proper British accent, upper class British accent. I said, "Sure, yeah, what? What do you need?" He said, "Could I ask a question about your boat?" And he proceeded to ask questions about my boat, the design, and so forth, because my boat does attract quite a bit of attention in the Mediterranean. So I said, "Which one's your boat?" And he points to it, and I said, "You're flying a white flag. Tell me about that flag. What's the deal with that flag? Because I've never seen one of those before." So he was British. He had the white flag with the British flag up in the corner of the white flag. So it's a white background with the British flag up in the corner. Oh, he said, "Well," and then he proceeded to explain to me the different classes of flags in Britain. And he said, "I'm a member of the Royal Yacht Squadron." I said, "Oh, that's pretty cool. How do I get to be a member of the Royal Yacht Squadron?" And he sort of very properly and diplomatically said, "Well, you sort of have to be invited. You sort of have to be invited." I said, "Oh, okay." Anyway, he was a real friendly guy. His name was Nigel. And that was that. And actually, I went back to his boat and asked permission to come aboard. And he brought me aboard. And the only reason I wanted to go back to his boat was he had some weather information that I wanted, and he offered it to me. He said, "Come over to my boat, I'll give you a weather forecast." And this was before I had some of the weather tools that I have now. So I went on his boat, and that was that. Now, a year later, I'm sailing up in Croatia in the national park at Mijet. I'm tied up to a dock, I'm stern to a dock, I'm medmoored to a dock. And this man comes by and says, excuse me, didn't I see you last year in Brindisi?" And I looked at him and I said, "Ah, yeah, you're the guy with the white flag, that's right. Nigel, right?" And he said, "Yeah." And then he proceeded to come aboard. And we had a nice long discussion. I had a couple of guests on my boat that were good friends. And I got to talking to him. I said, "Well, Nigel, tell me a little more about this white flag. How do you get to be a member of it?" "Well," he said, you have to be knighted, or you have to be," and I forget what else it was. But I said, "Well, how did you get in?" He said, "Well, I was the physician to the Queen, and when I retired, she knighted me." So his name was Sir Nigel Southwind. Very nice guy, very interesting character. Anyway, so that's a little story on flags. There's full chapters written on flag etiquette. So basically on flags, I think really what you need to know is the yacht ensign is flown at the stern of the boat. That's your country flag of the boat. You would fly the courtesy flag of the country you're visiting on the flag halyard located on the starboard spreader. You might have your yacht club, Bergie, flying from the masthead, the top of the mast, or the port flag halyard on your port spreader, or on the bow of the boat. One thing I've noticed in Europe, when I've sailed in Europe a lot, is a lot of the charter boats will be flying their country flag, which may or may not be the flag of the country they're chartering the vessel from. It could be the country of the owner of the vessel, and he's throwing it into a management company to charter out the vessel. Then they will have their courtesy flag flying from the starboard spreader flag halyard. Below that, they often will put the burgee of the yacht club. And on the port spreader, I've seen flags of the countries of the people that are chartering the yacht. It's not always, but I see that quite often. I think that's a nice courtesy to put the flags of the country of the people that are chartering the vessel on the port spreader. I think that's kind of neat. Now, in the United States, if you're flying an ensign in the United States, you actually have several choices. You have the U.S. flag, which is the traditional stars and stripes flag. You have the yacht ensign, which is the red and white stripes, but where the stars would normally go, you have an anchor surrounded by stars on a blue background. Less commonly is the Union Jack, which is a blue background with 50 stars. And sometimes you'll see the U.S. Power Squadron ensign for somebody that's a member of the U.S. Power Squadron. That's all acceptable in the United States. When you're sailing overseas in other countries, you are required to fly the traditional stars and stripes. You don't have the other choices. In yacht clubs, there's a lot of other flag etiquette, and usually these are flags that indicate the Commodore, the past Commodore, the fleet captain, the port captain, secretary, so forth. So you have flags of office with yacht clubs that may be flown from the port spreader. When you've done the Newport Ensenada race several times, you get a flag for each time you've participated in that. Those are flown, again, from the port spreader, the halyard, the flag halyard on the port spreader. That's pretty much all you need. I think we could go on forever on flag etiquette, but I think it's sort of pointless, quite honestly, as long as you know the basics. And the last thing we're going to talk about in this lesson is rendering assistance to vessels in distress. This is not etiquette. This is required. If you see a vessel in distress, you are required to render assistance to save lives. You're not required to render assistance to save vessels. So it's not even etiquette. It's a requirement that you do your best to save lives, to prevent injury to people. I don't know why they have that under etiquette, but it's not etiquette. It's required. And we've talked about this already. But when you are rendering assistance to a vessel in distress, you need to get on the radio and let them know that you're going to be attempting to render assistance, if you're able to. Alert other vessels that you're attempting to render assistance, and also ask for assistance yourself in rendering assistance to the other vessel, the vessel in distress. Do whatever you can. I don't know that there's a specific step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Each situation is going to be different. But try to communicate with the vessel you're rendering assistance to. You may have a language problem. But when you're doing this, don't put your own vessel at risk. Don't risk the lives and safety of your own crew when rendering assistance to another vessel. Do your best, but you are not required to put your own vessel at risk or put your own crew at risk when rendering assistance to other vessels. Do the best you can. That's about it. All right, that finishes up this lesson. Thanks for listening. If you're interested in any of my study products for the written portion of the ESA 101, 103, or 104 examinations, please check out my audio products at the website, medsailor.com. Also, you can find them in iTunes and in Amazon. Probably the easiest way is just to search for ASA 101, ASA 103, or ASA 104, and that should take you to where my products are available. My products are audio products. They're not written products. Or you can just search for my name, Franz Amason. Get out there and go sailing. That's what I'm doing while you're listening to this.
Joe? You have something to tell me?
No, I don't think so.
I just got off the telephone with Bill Rutherford. Princeton can use a guy like Joe.
What?
Princeton can use a guy like Joe. His exact words.
That's unbelievable.
You're as good as in. I knew you could do it. Haven't I been telling you, every once in a while, you just gotta say, what the heck, and take some chances.
You are so right.
You made me very proud.
I was just thinking, where we might be 10 years from now, you know?